Welcome, everyone, to Freedom Law School's weekly conference call on this Thursday, March 17, 2016. This is Peyman Mutahideh, the founder and president of Freedom Law School and your host for this weekly program. Folks, I'm here with you every Thursday night to answer your questions about freedom, law, your rights, and how to live free of oppressive taxation and control. How you can live free and become prosperous, folks. America was meant to be land of the free, home of the brave, the land of milk and honey, where you can be all you can be. This great continent was conquered by forefathers just a few hundred years ago. That's a short time, folks, in a span of history. And there's opportunities here in this great land. America is a great fertile land, natural resources, great people. Folks, we've become the greatest empire in the world. We want to go down from empire back to being a union of states, of free states, with free, prosperous, self-reliant people. And I'm here to help you understand the problems and assist you with solutions that actually work for you. And I believe it starts all with education. That's why I started Freedom Law School 20 years ago on January 1st, 1996, to help educate and empower the average American. Why? Because I myself had come from Iran in 1977 at the age of 14. And as I went through my university classes in the California State University system, I found myself ignorant, even after that, after university, of the law and my rights. When some patriotic Americans taught me about the income tax fraud, taught me about the U.S. Constitution for the first time, I was amazed. I was simply amazed at my ignorance. And I thought I was a fairly intelligent guy, a well-read guy, likes to read, got a degree in business administration, had two business law classes. And I found myself so ignorant that later on I start with a couple of my friends educating our local patriots in Orange County, California, to our level of ignorance, our level of education that we had brought ourselves. That was back in 1994. And since then, folks, I've assisted and educated so many scores of Americans to live free. And if you go to our website at livefreenow.org, you will see the results. Some of the results of our students actually winning over the most oppressive, powerful agency in America that harasses more Americans than any. The good old It Really Steals agency, abbreviation IRS. Folks, and you can do it too. I found out that there's no law that requires the average American to file and pay the federal income tax. It's a big fraud. It's a scam. Then I had a student of mine end up being a IRS special agent with the IRS's own criminal investigation division. And he studied Freedom Law School material while he was working for the IRS and verified the correctness of the things I was teaching. And he ended up confronting the IRS about all that and ended up leaving the IRS because the IRS couldn't show him the law that requires the average American to file and pay the federal income tax. Couldn't show him how by enforcing the income tax of the American people, he was being true to his oath to uphold the Constitution. Because he realized he was actually destroying Americans' rights guaranteed by the Constitution. He was stepping on the Constitution he had sworn to uphold. So, folks, I will send you this feature of this student of mine, Joel Banister, for free. I will send you extra ones to share with your friends, coworkers, family members, fellow Americans, anybody who cares to know the truth. Ask your friends, do you want to know the truth? Can you handle the truth? Straight, just tell people that. You'd be surprised at that kind of question. Well, what do you mean? Well, I'm going straight on. Can you handle the truth? If I tell you, give you a CD about what's really going on, what's some of the major real causes of our country going down, America going down the tubes, can you handle it? Will you listen to it and check it out? If they're open, share it with them. Give them the CDs that Freedom Law School provides you about income tax fraud by Joel Banister. Ed Griffin, the foremost expert on the Federal Reserve, Federal Reserve banking system. His speech will give it to you to pass out to people and more. Folks, and have them come to these conference calls to get their questions and concerns answered fully. So, Freedom Law School, folks, it's the education source for you to empower you to live free. I put together a lot of courses and material available over the years for you. And on top of that, I help you with solutions that actually work. And with the background I have, not only in finance as a formal education, but also being as a financial planner for over 6 years, been a real estate mortgage agent for a while, and a business owner way back in the 1980s, I bring quite of a practical knowledge about investments, money, finance, you know, how to make it happen, make it go to your freedom angle beyond just taxes, because it all relates together. So call Freedom Law School, folks. We are a unique source available for you to live free. Now, what I'm going to do in just a minute is open up the call to your questions. And folks, sometimes I have a lot of questions on these calls, sometimes not. Tonight's call wasn't promoted, so I don't expect that many calls. But the next week, I'm going to have a lot of callers, I expect, because I'm going to be promoting with some special information for people to know. And I'm going to do a class. I'm going to be doing classes on a more regular basis about different topics. I'm subject to these conference calls. They will help you understand the law and your rights that we were not taught in high school as we were supposed to. So with that, let's see if our caller from area code 916, area code in Sacramento, if you have a question, caller, go ahead and announce yourself at this time. Okay, no question at this time. Then what I'm going to do, folks, I'm just going to talk about one interesting point for you to consider tonight, and that is right now a lot of people are still scrambling to file these 1040 income tax confession forms. And the reason they're doing that is because I believe most of them were duped and or forced into paying the tax in the first place out of their paycheck. So now, in order to get the money that was stolen out of their paycheck, they have to fill out a 1040 income tax confession form to get that money back. And that is, in my opinion, probably the number one linchpin of the giant fraud on American people, in that the government succeeded in having employers withhold from the pay of employees from the salary and their wages money that does not belong to the government in the first place. Once they take that money out of the person's paycheck through their employer, now the employee who's barely surviving, folks, most Americans barely survive paycheck to paycheck. That's how it is. In order to get a few hundred dollars back, maybe a few thousand back of the money that was stolen from them, they are forced to fill out that 1040 income tax confession form to get that money back. So now they can go maybe catch up with some of their bills, or maybe go fix a car that was broken and they did not have the money to fix it, or whatever else necessity they had. So one of the things I suggest you all consider doing and think about, because I know many of you are employees, is look at doing anything on the side that's not salaried or wages. Subbing that by per piece, per production when you do something, do this production or make this call or get this task happening, or maybe sell a product and a commission or some sort. Do anything that even gets you $20 a month, $100 a month, $500 a month. Folks, that's how you start on your way to entrepreneurship in America. You know, you don't start right off the bat being an entrepreneur and make $3,000 to $10,000 a month. It doesn't work that way. That's not reality. Okay, I don't know if any entrepreneur right off the bat start doing that. You always start by doing something small, and even if you don't make a lot of money at it, if it doesn't work out for you, you'll learn something. You made a little bit of money, you got some good experience, and you learned something, and that money you did not have the government steal money out of your paycheck without your consent in the first place. Let's see if another call that we have from area code 240, if this caller has a question. Caller from area code 240, do you have a question you want to ask of me tonight?
It's Paymon. It's Robert from Maryland, I guess.
Hey, Robert, nice to hear from you, my friend. It's been a while. Yes. Robert and I had the pleasure of meeting Robert in the American Free Press Conference a couple years ago. We've been in touch since then. Great to hear from you, Robert.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I've been on previous calls since you've been on Blog Talk. And I got a couple of questions, but I'll just stick to maybe one or two. And if you go around again, maybe I'll add some more questions.
Sure.
Okay. On Blog Talk Radio, am I supposed to be able to listen to the live conference call on the web, or is it just dialed in on the phone?
You should be able to listen to it, I understand, on the web as well. But I'll ask my technical guy on that to be sure. But I think you should be able to do it either way. You can call in or listening by calling on the telephone number or by going to the website and stream it that way.
Okay, well, that is not happening for me. I only can find the archives, you know, the pre-recorded conference calls. And I can only find Freedom Law School conference call is when I put it in the search. Otherwise, it will not come up. I don't know if it's because you're a new program and you're not in the system yet, but there's no listing of you in the menu for the calls. Just wanted to make you aware of that.
Thanks for letting me know about that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have my technical guy, actually, if you don't mind, call you back after the conference call, perhaps, if necessary, and go over this with you, see what's going on. And thanks for bringing this problem to my attention so we can fix it.
Okay. Another quick question. I put exempt on my withholdings form. I think it's the W-2. I'm still having money stolen from my paycheck. I do not file a confession form, so I don't get any money back. But my enemy continues to want to send me letters saying that I owe. So to me, it's logically that I do not owe because I'm not getting the return for any of the money that is being stolen. So what do you suggest?
Well, since you're putting exempt on your W-4 form, then I would suspect that they're not withholding any regular income tax from your paycheck. So therefore, so what they're stealing, I believe, is the Social Security tax and Medicare tax. Is that correct?
No, sir. It's Social Security plus state, local, county, state tax, plus federal. I would say about $100 federal alone every paycheck, depending on how much I make, you know, how many hours I make. Maybe if I make overtime, you know. But on the average, it's maybe 40 hours, it's at least $70. A week. When I used to file years ago, I would always get something back because, you know, I just have great deductions.
And so this money is state and local, you mentioned. So that's a different thing than the federal income tax. Generally speaking, most employers, when it comes to withholding state and local taxes, they use whatever you put on your W-4 for federal taxes, use that same standard or criteria on your W-4 to withhold or not withhold state taxes and local taxes from your paycheck. In your case, your employer is not doing that. So that's something you may wish to discuss with them, perhaps, about, hey, how come you're doing that part of it? Then the last part being the Social Security tax. As long as employers have your number from you, that from at some point in the past they had obtained your slave surveillance number, and then they will take money out of your account and apply to that. Now, what you could try is to write to them, as you heard me on this commerce calls before, and tell them that they're not authorized to withhold anything from your paycheck. Because under IRS Code Section 7701A16, they're not withholding agents, and you're not one of those required to be withheld from under that code section. You can try that, perhaps, but and it may work. I've known people, by the way, that have worked for people without even Social Security being withheld. But almost always the people that I've known that no Social Security was stolen out of their paycheck happened because they went with a new company, a new employer who had not, they had not given their slave surveillance number to, because they have to have that number to credit or apply any money they steal out of your paycheck for Social Security tax. So now that they already have your number and your situation, it's a more challenging situation to convince them to stop. You can try, and I would definitely certainly try communicating with them, but there are ways to stop that. There may not be any way to stop that except down the road, perhaps, you know, leaving the company, getting another job, or starting your own business, perhaps.
Yes, I understand. Well, that's part of the problem, too, because anywhere I go, they always want your Social Security number. I can't even, they won't even give me a job, offer me a job, if I don't give a Social Security number. I can give them my life history, you know, date of birth, where I was born, mother's maiden name, everything. But if I don't fill in the blank for the Social Security number, they'll contact me and say, you left off your Social Security number. See, yes, I know, I'm aware of that. Well, we can't do anything without the number. Why do you need the number? We need to do a background check. You know, so I give them my driver's license, birth certificate, everything. Everybody wants a Social Security number. I can't do it, you know, nowhere. I try to get a telephone, a landline. We need your Social Security number. So it's like everywhere I go, every turn I make, everybody wants Social Security number. This is how it's become in the last, you know, several years, to my knowledge, for me, everything. So yeah, I can't do anything, go anywhere without using my Social Security number, unfortunately. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So I'm just going to, you know, I guess just leave it alone and try to do what you were talking about as far as becoming an entrepreneur. But I wanted to ask you what Paul was saying last Wednesday, I think it was the last call. He was saying, write two sentences on your paperwork, and, you know, you had to mute him, you had to cut him off. I wanted to ask you, is that what you call a patriot mythology?
What is patriot mythology?
What Paul was talking about on the last call.
Well, I don't remember that off the top of my head. You refresh me what he was talking about, please.
He was saying that you write two sentences on your W-2 form, I think it was, and that will stop the IRS from harassing you.
Well, that, you know, that was...
Okay.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah, there is no one simple thing you can do, like, or two sentences you can write to keep the IRS from coming after you or harassing you, because they got the power to keep coming at you and trying to mess with you and trying to hurt you, and you just got to be ready at every stage of the game to defend yourself. Just like a bully in a schoolyard, you know. There's no one simple thing you can do to stop the bully in a schoolyard from picking at you. You could do certainly take tactics to minimize contact with him. For example, if the bully tends to be in hall number 2 and number 3 a lot, avoid hall number 2 and 3, you know, to minimize contact with him. You can do something like that. You know, you could try to, you know, walk behind some other big people so you won't see you, or walk with a group of people so you won't be seeing you. There are different things you can do, but there's no one simple thing you can do that will guarantee they will leave you alone, like this person with Paul was trying to say.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'll let you move on.
No problem, my friend. No problem. You know, folks, the thing about the IRS, you know, is, and the government, one thing I learned a long time ago, you know, people like us, folks, just Americans, we just want to be left alone. We just want the government just to leave us alone. That's it. Let me live my life. I won't bother you. I do my thing. You do your thing. You know, and you're not to hurt anybody. You know, you're not here to interfere with anybody's lives in any way. But you see, the government is the bully that says, hey, you know what? I want a piece of you. I want a piece of your paycheck. I want some of your money. Okay, I want to control you. And you got to do this. And you got to do that. And you got to not do this and not do that. So that's the problem that we're facing in America, is that the government is the one that keeps harassing us, doesn't leave us alone, or sets up the situation where your employer, you know, that you're dealing with, they want that slave surveillance number, or you want to open a bank account, the bank insists on having your slave surveillance number, you know, all these things, you know. Oh, by the way, folks, I got some great announcements I'll be telling you guys. I before I forget, I found out there's a big bank. Well, I guess I'll tell you guys about it. Since you guys are on here, I'll give you guys a heads up about it. Recently, Chase Bank, by the way, has came up with a new policy there. New World Order Cashless Society to watch you and track you. They got a new policy that's starting in March of 2016, that if you want to pay a bill, a credit card or a loan with Chase, with cash, you must show them your ID as an account holder or whoever else you are. They want to see your ID. Well, guess what, folks? That's where Chase Bank, this multi-trillion-dollar entity, screwed up, and they crossed the line. Because when you go to pay anybody any debt that you have, and you offer them legal tender, and legal tender means by law, but government says this piece of paper is money, and you offer that, what government says is money, to somebody you owe money to, once that money is offered, they have to accept it. If they reject your money, guess what? It doesn't matter. Your debt has been paid because you offered with lawful money, legal tender, Federal Reserve notes, to pay that credit card bill with Chase, for example. Folks, the case, the Supreme Court cases that talk about this go way back to the War of the States in the 1860s. Okay, one of them, my favorite one, is Juilliard versus Greenman, 1871. Okay, they had contract with gold. They contracted only with the, you know, these people were going to pay in gold. They did not want greenbacks, the government money, what the government had declared to be legal tender. No, we don't want that worthless green piece of paper. I want some gold, real gold. Okay? And the guy that's supposed to pay in gold offered the guy legal tender greenbacks. That case went to court all the way to U.S. Supreme Court, and guess what? The Supreme Court said you cannot insist on gold. You have to take the legal tender, which is at that time greenbacks. Today, the legal tender is the Federal Reserve notes that the government has forced upon us. Okay, you and I wish we could do contract with silver and gold, but no. The federal government has said you cannot do that. No matter if your contract's in gold or silver, the guy that owes money can't pay that money in Federal Reserve notes. You cannot change it or add conditions to that. So when Chase adds a condition that you show them an ID before they take your money to pay the bill, guess what? They cross the line. So you walk in there with that Chase bill, credit card or loan bill you got, walk in there with your cell phone camera, recorded that you're there to pay that bill. Don't have to say who you are. Don't tell the bank teller, Chase Bank employee, who you are. And you say, here, I'm here to pay, say, $1,000 toward this bill. And they refuse it because you refuse to give them your ID. They said, no, without your ID, we will not take the money toward the bill. That's owed. Well, okay. Too bad, Chase. Here it is. I got it all recorded. I got the $1,000 counted with the bill right here. You record the money, the bill, the Chase employee saying no to you. You have it all, just all documented. And then Chase is paid. You can do it next month again and again with a new bill that you have added. That $1,000 you offered is done. It's paid. Later on, if the Chase will like to keep coming after you, you can sue them. And you should sue them for quiet title and for damages. That's right. Quiet title because, hey, you want to quietly be declared that you paid this money, it's paid. And then, you know, Chase's damage or credit by reporting you to credit reporting agencies as not having paid your debt, which is false, you have, and all of that, the damage of credit and otherwise, you can sue them under federal law for those kind of damages. So that's a fun little project, folks. I'll plan to get started going. I've talked to Attorney Larry Beecraft about this, who's an expert on money as well as income tax and constitution. He likes it. We're going to put something together. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of upcoming project coming up. We're going to get this all over the internet, folks. It's going to be a big thing. Pay Chase without paying Chase. Okay? That's the way to do it back to these big, most criminal, murderous, stealing bank in America. You know, these Chase criminals are the ones that are key player owner of the Federal Reserve of New York, Bank of New York. They own politicians. They own big, you know, Democrat Republican parties. Who do you think is against Trump in the Republican establishment? Who is they? It's Chase, folks. Chase Bank, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America. Get the big New World Order corporations around them, folks. They're the ones that don't want independent politicians. They want stooges, okay, like Bush and Rubio and Kasich, okay, even Ted Cruz, he's a stooge too, remember? Ted Cruz's wife, guess what? She worked for Goldman Sachs. That's right. I was surprised and disappointed to learn that. Even Mr. Second Amendment, Texas, Mr. Conservative against Obamacare, his wife worked for Goldman Sachs, got a big promotion once he got into office. And she managed to get him a $750,000 loan for Goldman Sachs for running for office. And by the way, and he forgot to put that. Ted Cruz and his wife forgot to put that on his campaign, political campaign reports. You're supposed to report any loans that you have. You know, like that's us. I don't believe that. That he forgot. He knew. He just didn't want to list it there. That's all. So, folks, people are sick and tired of all these stooges of the big banks and corporations running for office. That's why Donald Trump no matter how you may disagree with some of his positions, because I certainly do, some of his positions, he's a welcome breath of fresh air, of independence. Someone actually is interested in helping the American people, because he certainly is a rich enough billionaire, doesn't need any more money. That's not why he's running for office. You know, he wants to do the right thing, and he might make some mistakes, not be perfect, fine. But he certainly will not be a stooge of the big banks and corporations we've been having for decades and decades running this country down. So with that, I think let's see if our caller from area code 415 in California has a question. Yes. If so, please announce yourself, sir.
Yes, gentlemen. Is this my turn?
Yes, it is your turn, sir. What is your name?
This is Dr. Sherwin calling from Northern California, city of Novato in Marin County. And thank you very much, gentlemen, for...
Yes, gentlemen. I remember you. I got your package in the mail, Dr. Sherwin.
Oh,
yes.
Am I talking to Mr. Payman Motahede?
Yes, of course, Dr. Sherwin.
Oh, my God. My God. This is my day. Thanks, Father in heaven, for this opportunity. I waited 40 long years for this moment to talk to a man like you. Let me say that I don't know you very well, but I want to say my heart respects you for what you have done. You have accomplished a great ideology, which was overdue for many, 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 many years. And I am very proud of you as a human to a human being, but especially, if I may say, we are from the same background and nation, and I am proud of my nation and my culture and my history. We have contributed towards the enrichment of the world civilization and humanity and science and art and philosophy and astronomy, you name it. And you have come to this country and took the steps that many intellectuals wanted to take. They didn't know how to do it. You did the Freedom School of Law. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for your efforts. Certainly, you will be rewarded in this world and the world to come. God loves you. And the nation loves you because you have fundamentally changed things. And this is one of a kind that comes in a thousand years. And I wished I knew you earlier. I wished I would knew you much earlier, and I could offer to serve the Freedom School myself. But before going any further, gentlemen, please allow me to say Happy New Year on the occasion of our ancient and maybe the first foremost festivity of the world of humanity, our Nowruz, or our New Year, which coincides with the first day of spring and renewal of nature. I wish we could renew the government. I wish we could renew the mode of dealing with each other. I wish we could renew our pledge with our Father in heaven, who said peace on earth. Peace on earth. We don't need any more wars. We, humanity, had enough of it. We should give the peace a chance. And I pray that this new year, our Nowruz, first day of spring, bring the news of peace to the entire globe and to the entire mankind. And I hope and pray that our so-called forefront leaders consider peace this year. consider to reconcile with the rest of the world. And I am sorry, carried away and talked too much. I want to be silent and answer any question you might have for me. And believe me, I am sitting in my car in a parking lot, and I am thirsty and hungry from early morning to now, but I am thirsty to hear from you and answer any question you might have for me. Thank you, gentlemen, for giving me this opportunity to talk to you.
Well, Dr. Shervin, I reviewed the package that you sent to me in the mail, in which various individuals and organizations that you've been to try to petition various governmental agencies and individuals to assist you in your quest to seek justice. What happened to Dr. Shervin, folks, he's a dentist. He came from Iran to get educated here in the 1970s. And then he was a dentist. And then he was with the University of California. Correct?
Sorry, interrupting. After graduation from dental program, I spent 5 years in post-graduation oral and maxillofacial surgery. I am an oral and maxillofacial surgeon by training. My thesis comprising of several chapter 225 pages. And I have research work on 36 articles in my field.
Right.
Sorry for interrupting you.
No, that's okay. No, you're right, because you're right. At oral and maxillofacial maxillofacial is actually a more advanced than just simple dentistry, because you actually conduct surgery of the mouth and the jaws and related structures, which actually requires extra years of education and specialty that you have on your belt.
Five years additional.
And they what happened is that Dr. Shervin came under attack for various reasons, not just by the University of California system, but also by the dental board. And later on, they seems like they conspired with the police to raid his house. Mobilized police force, right. Rescue raids, yes, exactly. And did that. And when I read your paperwork, it seems like at some point you had gone to court of appeal and actually got a victory there against him. And then it seems like the governor of California, these defendants, came to pretend to be negotiating, want to negotiate a deal with you to work out something, but they didn't do that. They did in good faith. But it seemed like you didn't seem to continue on at trial to go get a judgment against them at the trial level. And I was kind of curious what happened there, that you didn't continue on to a trial level to get a judgment against these defendants. That was about 20-plus years ago. That was my concern. That was a big puzzle in my eyes of what happened, that you didn't continue on pursuing these defendants.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for reviewing this introductory document I sent your attention. This is heartrending by all definition. Besides answering your question, I have to assure you and anyone who hears my voice, I assure you, gentlemen, I came to this land with my heart in my breast to serve this nation. I didn't come to amass wealth here or for position or for worldly thing. I had a relatively good life back home. I am from a very recognized family. My father was a dentist for 40 years in the Ministry of Health of Iran. He was also a very renowned journalist writer with the newspaper published under the title The Power of Faith, was the newspaper of my father. Peace be upon him. And my uncle, Dr. Shervin, was Minister of Health in Iran and one of the top politicians of Iran. And he had his own newspaper, The Love of Motherland, Mehrebihan, Mother, Love of Motherland. That was my little bit of my background, growing up in a family of scientists, intellectuals, journalists, writers, poets, artists, and humanitarians. My mother was a humanitarian lady whom whole town respected and loved. In their problem, always they would come to my mother, and my mother would ask my father to help downtrodden people. And my mother passed away at age 32. But gentlemen, to answer your question, briefly speaking, after long ordeal, my entire youth spent in court system in this country. My best years of my life in spent in courts. I shuffled alone without a lawyer. You can imagine you are a scholar in law. You know how difficult it is to fight the government, the might of the state, all alone by yourself. This is unheard of, but I did it, and I prevailed in trial in San Francisco Superior Court against the state of California and the University of California, UCSF, and the licensing board. I prevailed all alone, and the judge, who was a senior judge presiding on the trial, he issued a 6-page order after the trial. He deliberately mentioned one by one what they have done to me, and he said this man proven to the court that he taken and passed the entire licensing board, and you are not issuing his professional license because he dared to sue the might of University of California and the licensing board on the same matters. Therefore, I order you within 10 days to return and issue this man's professional license. This is an order from the San Francisco Superior Court. If I want to tell you what happened after this order was issued, it will appall you, anyone, as already thousands of people are appalled in the state, in other states, even beyond the border. I prevailed in a trial without a lawyer. You know how hard that is in America, but I did that. And then they did, I don't want to really use an inappropriate word, but they did hanky and panky with the power of the state and their financial muscles and the political muscles and lobbyists, and they got my case dismissed by another judge shortly after I prevailed in a trial in front of a senior judge. The judge who dismissed my case shortly after, through the fraud and oppression and the obstruction of justice, was a female, a junior judge who was just appointed as a judge, and she dismissed my case. Gentlemen, you are scholars in law. You know, it is unheard of anywhere in the world when someone, after a formal trial, prevails and receives winning orders, that order cannot be so easily or readily ignored or set aside by a junior judge, a female, without even pointing to the original order. Did you ever hear such a thing, that when someone prevails in a trial, if the opponent, the defendant, they want to take legal action, they have to go through a proper course of action, that is appealing it to an appellate court and let the appellate judges decide that the original judge made some blunders and some errors in application of law or in consideration of witnesses and discovery of evidences. But if I would present to your school, Freedom School of Law, two orders. One is the original order by Judge Roy L. Wonder, a senior judge of the San Francisco Superior Court, who presided over the trial and issued a 6-page order against the state of California and in my favor. And the latter order, which came by just a few weeks later by a female, after they transferred the case illegally and corruptly and without the application of law and due process of law and equal protection of law, they transferred my case after I prevailed in the San Francisco Superior Court in a trial in front of a senior judge, Roy L. Wander, who issued this order against the state and the licensing board and others, if they wanted to really challenge that order, they should have gone to an appellate court, higher court, but they surreptitiously moved the case from Judge Wander's court to another court, which was a female, a favoring judge to them, friendly judge to them, without a notice of another trial, without a prior notice. Where did you hear such a thing? You know how they pulled me to the second court? One of the judges of the state of California, who was really defense attorney, he called me at my place, at my home at night at 8:30 p.m., invited me to a meeting in the courthouse in front of the law library on the fourth floor on such and such Tuesday morning. Please be there early morning, 7:30, be in front of the law library. We know they have done wrong to you. We know that they have hurt you. We want to settle your case amicably and friendly out-of-court settlement. I want to come there. You be there. I am coming there to talk to you how we are going to settle your case out-of-court, and you will get enough financial damages to the point that you say, I am satisfied, I am happy, but you have to cooperate, you have to listen to us, because government doesn't want to make a citation by another defeat in the court. They want to settle your matter out of the court. You will get your professional license immediately issued to you, and you will get your damages to the point that you say, I am satisfied, I am happy. I said, what do you want me to do, gentlemen? This was an attorney by the name of Edwin Zinman, who was pretending to be caring for me, but in fact he was one of the defense attorneys of the state of California. Edwin Zinman is practicing downtown San Francisco on Market Street. And he called me to a meeting, first to his office, then to in front of the library. And when I went to the library early morning that day, there was an older gentleman from my country who happened to be a little bit of my consultant and guide at that time in my life. And he came with me as a witness to the library, waiting for Mr. Zinman, Attorney Zinman, comes and talks to me about settlement. But when we were waiting in front of the library, suddenly I saw Edwin Zinman, attorney, is coming with his briefcase with attorney generals, two of them with him. I was very taken aback, but what can I do? And he saw us standing in front of the library. He pointed from far, from a, let's say, 10, 15 yards to us. He pointed to me to follow them. He didn't come forward to shake hands or greet me. He just asked me to follow them, and me and my consultant gentleman followed them. They took us to another courtroom in the courthouse, another courtroom which I never been in my life, and they asked us to wait in the corridor, and they entered the courtroom. After 10-15 minutes, the bailiff opened the door and asked my name to come in that new courtroom. My consultant gentleman, older man, wanted to come. The bailiff said, no, you cannot come, only me. So I entered with the bailiff to the courtroom, courtroom, and the bailiff took me to the judge's chamber. And when I entered the chamber, I saw this attorney, Edwin Zinman, with two state defense attorneys are already sitting with this female judge, which I didn't know. Judge was in the robe, sitting behind the desk. These three men were sitting with him, with her rather, talking. When I arrived, the judge was really not very friendly, not very polite with me. She just pointed a chair at the corner of the room to sit there. And I sat there silently, and I was very confused, really. What the hell we are doing here? Edwin Zinman told me he wants to talk to me about a settlement out of court in front of the law library. but then they pulled me in this manner to another court. And after a few minutes, the lady judge turned to me, said, defendant have filed a motion for reconsideration of the order against them and in your favor, and we are going to hear their motion today. There is a hearing right now in a few minutes by 8 a.m. I was totally shocked. I never had my files with me, my witnesses with me, my evidences with me. I was not prepared for another trial in this manner without a notice, prior notice of a trial. And I very politely said to the lady, I said, you know, this gentleman called me at my home, invited me to a meeting in front of the law library for settlement out of court. And now he brings me to this court. I don't know what is going on. I have never received a prior notice that there is a hearing coming up today. I am not prepared. Please, 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 if there is any hearing coming up on the case for reconsideration for any motion, please postpone this and give me a prior proper notice and give me time to prepare and I will come. And she, at this time, she said, no, 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 we have no time. In a few minutes, we are going to trial. And Edwin Zinman actually got up and pulled me out of the chamber to the corridor and said, shush, shush, shush. The jurisdiction of your case now is pending with this judge. And the judge has calendared this for a trial right now. And if you resist, they will call off the hearing. And she can postpone the hearing for indefinitely for 2-3 years. What can you do? You have won a decision from Superior Court. They cannot change that easily. We will confirm that. You agree with me. Let us go. Let us go to the trial. And my attending consultant, old man, he came to my ear. He said, let us go. Let us go. Let us do it. And I said, gentlemen, do you promise me to let me also talk during this session? And he said, sure. And I succumbed to that pressure, and we entered the courtroom, and the session formalized, and the judge was sitting, the female behind the desk, with 2-3 bailiffs, and 2-3 lawyers from the state. I was by myself alone. In the audience section, there was only one spectator, and that was my consultant, old gentleman from Iran, who was my consulting buddy. And he was the only one sitting. And when the trial began, so-called, the judge invited the attorney generals to talk first. And they start, honest to goodness, misrepresentation through their teeth, misrepresentation, falsification, concealment of the material facts, evidence, laws, and witnesses and evidences. And I was writing notes, putting in front of Edwin Zinman, because he was supposedly appointed by the judge as my pro bono without my consent. I told the judge, I don't accept any pro bono. I have been to prior court myself, and I prevailed. I want to do it by myself. I don't need Mr. Zinman. Please allow the gentleman go back to his practice and postpone this, whatever it is. Give me time to prepare. But they didn't. And then when we went to the so-called second trial, they were falsifying. I was writing notes, putting in front of this pro bono, Mr. Zinman, to please oppose what they are saying. He was piling up my notes and not uttering a word. Finally, I had no choice. I voiced out to the court. I said, I object to the statement by the defense. And when I said I object, the lady, so-called judge, shouted at me very insolently, saying, you cannot object, you have a lawyer here, a pro bono. I said, lady, I have told you I don't need Mr. Zinman. I don't need this pro bono. I don't need him. You forced him and forced him on me. Now he is not responding. He's keeping silent. When a lawyer keeps silent, means he's agreeing with the party who is at the podium talking. And then I kept another other making notes, putting in front of Zinman, please, gentlemen, object to what they are saying. He was not doing that. For the second time, I voiced out to the court, I object. The minute I said this, the lady ordered bailiff to exclude me from the whatever it was, mock, truly mock hearing. And the bailiff, they took me out outside to the corridor. One of the bailiffs, two bailiffs took me out, was a black bailiff, African. The white bailiff took me out and went back to the court. But the black bailiff told me, gentlemen, I am 20 years bailiff of this court. I have seen it all of crime and oppression and obstruction of justice. Go and find a good lawyer for yourself. They are doing it to you, and I am a witness in front of Father in heaven. The black bailiff told me and went in. And I came home very, very brokenhearted. And I sat down and I wrote a letter to the original judge, Judge Roy Wonder. I said, Judge, you asked me to go to Attorney General's office after I prevailed by your order. You asked me to go to defense counsel in the state office of Attorney General. The defense counsel was, black gentleman, go to him. And I did that. But when I went to their offices, they wanted me to sign an statement already drafted, already printed in 3-4 pages. They wanted me to sign that statement that I agree that your order against them and in my favor should be reconsidered. They wanted me to sign such an order, such a statement, and I objected and I said I will not sign that. I said I will not sign that, and they told me, if you don't sign that, you will get nothing. I said, doesn't matter. They said, one of them attorneys said, do you want me to throw out of the window? I said, you may do that, but I'm not signing this statement. I don't know the content. You should not ask me to sign. These were all happening. I am sorry. I am really, really exhausted. Sometime I lose the date of discussion. This happened before I went to that day. They took me to the second court and put me in that fake and mock trial, so-called. And they excluded me from the whatever it was. And I came back and I wrote to the original judge. I said, you asked me to go to the Attorney General's office. They wanted me to forget about your order, throw it in the trash, and go and sit and take my final exam again. I said, why I should? I have passed by evidence. I have passed the final exam, not one time, not two times, three times. Each time with an overall average grade above the state's requirement for licensure. And I have finally a court order for my professional license after a formal trial. And now you say I have to throw the order by the court to the trash and go and sit and take my final exam again. They wanted me to do that so that they don't have a citation against them and escape paying my enormous financial damages and other damages. That's why they were asking me, forget about Judge Wonder's order, go and apply and take your final exam. I said I have taken the exam not one time, two times, but three times, each time passing the final licensure examination with an overall average grade above the state requirement for licensure. They are depriving me because I have dared to stand against the might of the state of California and the University of California and the licensing board and suing them, and that's why they are depriving me. Among other things, they are depriving me for litigation, and everybody in the community attests to that and knowledgeable of that, and they know about that, and they are protesting all this thing. Now, after gentlemen, the second trial, so-called mock trial, which they excluded me from the rest of the hearing, usually you are the expert in law. Usually when a hearing is held, or a rule, an order is issued by any court, usually within the framework of law and due process of law, within 2 weeks, the decision of the court is announced and sent to the parties and let them know what the court decided. After the second mock trial, it took more than 6 months before the court issued the order. How could that be? They were deciding among their cahoots. They were getting with each other and deciding what to do with this case. And the second trial happened on 12th of, I believe, month of July. At the end of February that year, 26th year of February that year, I prevailed in the trial by Judge Roy Elwander, the original trial. The second trial took place on 12th of July that year, just about 2.5-3 months from the original order. But gentlemen, please allow me to say, and please attend what I say. If I fax or email or mail to you both orders, the order, original order by senior judge Roy Elwander, dated February 26th of that year, which was 1985. Can you imagine? And if you look at the second order, which came a few weeks after by this maneuver by the state, transferring the case without an appeal from the original court to a lower court, to a lower judge, to a female judge, and dismissing the whole case without giving me a prior notice for the trial or hearing, without let me present my case, my witnesses, my evidences, my issues to the court and the facts. This, if I send you both these orders, you are the man of law. You are the expert in law. Please allow me to send these two orders to you and see in the second order, latter order against me, which totally dismiss each and every claim of mine. The second order, there is no one single word of reference to the original order. How could that be? How could that be? The second judge or second trial, so-called, should prove by the law, by the citation, by the case law, that the first judge, senior judge, made some misapplication of law or a violation of the laws of discovery or consideration of evidences. Therefore, they have to prove without any shadow of doubt that the first trial was, they committed errors. Therefore, by the rule of law, set aside the original order before they render a new order. But you will not find one word of reference to the second order, which dismisses all my claims, to Judge Roy Elwander's original order, as if such order was not existing in this world. They totally bypass that order, in which judge strongly condemned them, and judge said, this man has passed the entire exam. I give you 10 days to issue his professional license. What else you want? They totally bypass that order and issue a new order as if that order was never in this world existing, and issue an order dismissing all my claims without due process of law, without equal protection of law, without my constitutional law of competent presentation, having a lawyer talking for me, and without discovery. Rather, whatever I painstakingly have discovered, totally bypassing those, ignoring those, and ignoring a senior superior court judge's 6-long-page orders in my favor and against the state of California. This is just one small example. And if I want to tell you numerous other such foul doing, wrongdoing, obstructing court and justice, travesty of justice, I cannot contain it within a book. It requires a whole set of an encyclopedia of organized crime and obstruction of justice. And this is not what me as one person is saying. For 30 or more years, community have looked into this, investigated all this one by one. This is one example I told you. They investigated. Their media came in three separate times, investigated, unanimously condemning this violation, atrocity, and obstruction of justice. This obstruction of justice reached a point of decadence, a shame for this society. You know, the whole...
Dr. Sherman, hold on. One minute, hold on. Listen, I got to go on with the rest
sorry.
Of the program.
I am sorry.
That's okay. No, that's okay.
I am apologizing for being carried away. I am a man hurting for 40 years.
I know you're hurting very much. That's why I'll let you go on for a little while. Send me the copy of this other paperwork that you got, and I'm going to see if I can help you a different way with your situation with the county grand jury, just to give you a short view of it. Basically, I think what you need to do in this case to go to the citizen grand jury of city and county of San Francisco that has jurisdiction over all these acts of the judges, the prosecutors, U.S. attorneys, U.C. officials, the police, and have
and
them
the
go after these guys and the police and indict these guys criminally, and now open this whole thing again for you properly. And I also would have... I would go apply for that license right now at this point because you got that judge's order in your hand that they should give you the license. I would take that order in your hand anyhow and say, hey, excuse me, I got the judge's order. Give me my license. I would take that order. Still valid. I don't see how that order of the judge is invalid. I don't see how anything that happened later on invalidated that portion of the judge's order. I will do that. But get all that stuff done, and I'll see if I can help you, my friend.
Gentlemen, please allow me just a few minutes. Allow me, first of all...
I gave you a lot of time.
What
can you do it wrap up in five minutes, okay?
Yes, I try to stay within that framework. First of all, I hope and pray to Father in Heaven that I am awake, not dreaming this thing. After 40 years, I hear this and brings tears to my eyes. And I want to congratulate you for the good blood of father and good milk of your mother. Thank you. You are a hero by all means. No matter if I see that day that something fair is being finally done, in advance, I thank you for every minute you put is patiently listening to me, and believe me, I am not rehearsing this thing. I pour out from my exhausted body and brain and heart. I want to thank you for every minute you and your office, your workers, your co-workers, your employee spend on this. I thanking you and congratulating you for great humanity. We are doing this thing in the name of God, in the name of human decency, for the sake and good of this nation. We are not against America. Those people who committed this crime and atrocities, they are the real enemy of America. I consider myself very patriotic. I gave 40 years of my life to curb this atrocities and violation and improprieties and obstruction of justice and beating me in my home repeatedly by police, fracturing my skull and acquitting the state. You know, this is a shame. This is a disgrace. You know, President Abraham Lincoln said, silence, when is the time to speak out, makes coward of man.
That's correct.
Peace be upon him.
That is right.
Abraham said, silence when is the time to speak out makes coward of man. You know, I am not a coward and you are not. And we did it for the sake of society, betterment of this society, so that this type of thing never recur again. You know, if I get, I am now living a mile at least below the poverty level for 40 years, you know. And I could be a senator in Iran in 3 years if I would stay in my own country. I was assistant professor. I could have everything. But I am not remorsing coming to America. I am still looking for that America which I loved before coming here. And I'm sad for America that behaves like this. And I want fairness and justice. And I promise you, if I get a penny or whatever at the end, I ask your permission to give it to a charity. I have contributed to numerous charities in 30 years of my life that I was dismantled and impoverished. And I have a folder full of letters of appreciation from numerous organizations across the land, not only in California, calling me a hero, calling me citizen of the year. Recently, 2 weeks ago, I received a letter from a veteran administration calling me their own hero, because in years I have contributed to orphanages, to cancer children, to veterans, to charities, and I'm very proud of that. I am not against America. They are against themselves. They are against America, those people who committed these atrocities and crime and obstruction of justice. But I prevailed in the court. I prevailed in the court of public opinion. I prevailed. And above all, I prevailed in the court of the Supreme Justice of our Father in Heaven. And I am very proud of having a medal of courage and honor from my community on my struggle. And I shake your hand, and if you allow me, I kiss your forehead, and I pray and praise you. And I pray for you that new year, our new year, very soon in spring, bring even further success and victory to you and your colleagues in Freedom School of Law. God be with all of you. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. On behalf of my children and my family back home, whom I have not seen for 40 years, and on behalf of my people, supporters, who supported me for 4 decades this year, I pray for all of them, and thank you from the bottom of my heart, if you can help me. And this is a well-deserving case for the school, Freedom Law School. This
well,
is
as I
a
said,
very,
the rest
very
of the paper,
deserving
children,
and
I'll look at it.
Will be
okay?
A plus for you. Thank you.
Send me the rest. You're welcome. You're welcome, Dr. Sherbin.
What do you want me to do?
Send me the paper
time
that you mentioned, the court order things that you mentioned. Okay.
I will,
okay.
Gentlemen. Thank you
very
much. Have a great weekend. You touch my heart. God bless you.
God bless you, Dr. Sherbin. Okay, folks, now I'm going to go to, we have one more caller from area code 479. Do you have a question to call from area code 479?
Yes, sir. Trying to find out what I can do being over something that I've been told I am a current Watergate-style whistleblower. It's massive. The FBI Public Corruption Task Force has been formed over the circumstantial evidence I've provided. Many elected offices across the country are falling and being charged. I've been told I'm a whistleblower, but due to the public sector and the laws of whistleblowing, that is untrue.
Okay. Could you give me a little more detail about what you're talking about, my friend?
I've got the entire stimulus bill under criminal audit by the FBI Public Corruption Task Force. I've been told I'm a 137 credible witness participant, and I've been told by the U.S. Marshals that I'm a 9-21.000 federal witness. But the problem is I turned the public sector into what is called a 9-111.000, which forbids contact and assistance. I've been called a modern-day deep throat.
Okay. So continue with what you're doing.
I'm trying to recover.
Okay. So I don't see a problem with what you're doing. I wish you lots of success. How can I assist
you? Is there anything? How do I find, comply with the FBI and obtain the legal representation when nobody wants to touch it? I have tried and tried complying. The 137 states that I have to have representation, but I can't find it. I am non-criminal, but, you know, I've lost all past, present, and future income. I'm very well known for my activities of bringing forward the illegal and corrupt actions of several of the attached stimulus bill programs. It's
okay.
All public sector.
Well, that's not something
you
I'm
know,
very specialized. I tell you what state do you live in?
Arkansas,
okay. Well,
I mean, we're a low populous state. I can't find representation in my state. We're such a low populated state to begin with. And some of the parties that become in trouble, most all of our attorneys are alumni of.
Okay. But one thing
I've made
I would
a lot
do,
of enemies.
Okay. Have you contacted the Arkansas grand jurors?
I'm not allowed to be in touch with the Justice Department.
Who told you that?
The U.S. Marshals for turning in the DOJ and the FBI as a whistleblower.
No, well, okay, listen, just be in touch with the federal FBI, and if you want to go to the county grand jury, you're doing a good job as it is. I'm not
right.
sure how you want any assistance from me. How can I assist you, my friend? What are you asking
well, I'd
of
like
me?
To, well, how can I legally obtain representation for a percentage of the recovery is what I am seeking. I don't want their help anymore. What I've gone through, I don't even want to deal with them anymore. I mean, there's over $17 billion already recovered from what I provided. And growing tremendously.
What I would do, I would call the Yellow Pages, open the Yellow Pages, keep looking for lawyers that one of them is interested in and a good part to take. That's what I would do. There's bound to be somebody.
I've seeked, and almost every attorney that has interest ends up falling. They can't get past that they're representing already somebody, a city or state. They've already done deals with their city. They're under retainers or conflict of interest. I mean, I've run through this so heavily. I've been through so many different bar associations, attorneys. I mean, I don't, you know, the amount of money that's involved here, I just can't understand it. Even though I provided circumstantial evidence, I was a participant.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the FBI... My First Amendment
I don't have
was
an answer
classified
to you, Michael.
By the...
Listen. Okay. What's your name, my friend?
Okay. What's your name? J.D.
J.D. J.D.
Yeah. J.D.
I wish I had a better answer for you, my friend, but I don't know of any good attorneys in Arkansas I could refer you to. The only thing I could suggest to you, there's a guy that did the Clinton Chronicles video. I forgot his name. I don't remember off the top of my head. And he's a good guy, of course. He fought against the Clintons. He might know of a good lawyer out there in Arkansas. So the Clinton
okay.
Chronicles
I,
that...
Being at a, yeah, okay. But I mean,
that
according
my
to the FBI, I can go to any jurisdiction since it's engulfing every jurisdiction in the country.
Fine. Then you go there. You're doing a good job with the FBI. Then it looks like you're doing
I
a
have.
Good job on your own, looks like.
Well, I need some sort of compensation. I've lost my business and my livelihood over this.
Well,
a good job doesn't put food on my table.
I understand. I wish I could do something that could put your food on your table, my friend. But I don't know how
right.
to do that. Okay?
I mean, I'm not seeking billions of dollars of funds. I want survival.
I understand.
Okay. Okay. I just keep looking.
Keep looking,
Thank
my
you.
Friend. Just don't give up. You're welcome, yep. my friend.
Okay. Have
okay.
a good day.
Same with you, my friends. Good luck with you, JD. Okay, folks. We've been on this conference call now for about an hour and a half now. I want to thank you all for being with me. As you notice, every conference call is a little bit different and unique. So, sir, I'm going to have a lot more to offer you guys next week, folks. A lot more specific going on with the IRS and the lesson. So be sure to tell your friends about Freedom Law School's weekly conference call, and I'll be back with you to help educate you and provide solutions for you to live free. Good night, everybody.